Welcome to this introduction to the New Vic Theatre's latest production, A Matter of Life and Death. I'm Pam Beach, and I'll be audio describing the show, along with Brenda Hennessy, on Saturday the 19th of April at 2:15pm. The touch tour will start at 1:15. We'll meet you in the foyer in front of the box office a few minutes beforehand. The running time of the show is approximately 2.25 hours, including a 20-minute interval. A Matter of Life and Death by Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger has been adapted by Theresa Heskins in a new staging of the iconic British film. She also directs this production. The play is a story of two worlds, the one we know and another which exists only in the mind of a young airman whose life and imagination have been violently shaped by war. A 10-piece jazz swing band form part of the 14-strong cast to evoke the mood of the 40s era. It's 1945. When British pilot Peter Carter's plane goes down just off the coast of England, he doesn't expect to survive. Miraculously, after leaping from his burning plane without a parachute, he finds himself face to face with June, the American radio operator who kept him company on his final journey. As the pair fall instantly in love, Peter discovers an error has occurred. He was supposed to die, but the heavenly conductor missed him as he fell through the fog. Caught in limbo between life and death, Peter is called by the celestial court to answer for his right, to defend his right to live. Can he convince the judge he deserves a second chance at life and prove that love can conquer all? In case you haven't visited this theatre before, I'll now tell you about the auditorium where the players performed before I describe the set. The New Vic Theatre is a theatre in the round, so the audience surrounds a circular stage. Tiered purple upholstered seats rise all around the flat circular stage, which is approximately 10 metres in diameter. Three evenly spaced entrances lead up onto the stage. Two are used by actors and audiences, and the third, slightly larger main entrance, is used only by actors. Thinking of a clock face, if the main entrance is at 12 o'clock, the other two entrances are at 4 and 8 o'clock. During the audio description, we'll name the 4 o'clock entrance the right entrance and the 8 o'clock entrance the left entrance. By the main entrance at 1 o'clock and by the left entrance at 9 o'clock, there is a section of acting space we call a notch. Behind the audience seating is a circular pathway known as the promenade. Five sets of aisle steps lead down from it to the stage. The aisles and promenade are used by both audience and actors. In the aisles, at the end of each row of seats, there are small handrails to assist ascent and descent. Perched above the promenade is a balcony edged with a safety barrier and housing two rows of seats. Fixed high above the stage is a large lighting rig complete with walkways known as the grid. Props may be stored or suspended from here. For this show, the front row of seats has been removed to give more acting space on the stage. The back two rows of seats above the main entrance have also been removed and a platform constructed in the space to provide a band area. A piano and a set of drums are played there, with space between them for a few musicians to stand. The platform extends at the front, the width of the entrance, to give a prominent place for a solo musician or singer to perform at a standing microphone. As you enter the auditorium, you'll hear recordings of 40s music. The stage will be empty apart from two old wooden church chairs on the edge at 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock, and three standing microphones halfway to the centre at 12 o'clock, 4 o'clock and 9 o'clock. A US Air Force jacket hangs over the back of one chair. Warm, bright light, focused on the centre of the stage, peters out towards the audience seating. This light enhances the warm, earthy tones of the flat stage floor, which resembles wood grain, like a slice through a tree trunk with concentric growth rings. Almost 7 metres in diameter, the very large central circular section of the floor can revolve. It moves frequently throughout the play, turning smoothly in either a clockwise or an anticlockwise direction. On this revolving floor, like spokes of a wheel from the circumference, are 46 2.5-metre-long strips. Empty space, 1.5 metres in diameter, is left centre stage. These strips, about 1 inch wide, are actually LED light strips which illuminate in sections to give a sense of a white stairway to heaven. A final spiral section of the stairway descends from the roof space as a cluster of three huge aluminium circular ladder structures unfurls. The ladder rungs also illuminate like the floor strips. Projections on the floor and other lighting also play an important part in this production with the minimal set. The projections create borders for scenes. For example, stars and constellations in the cosmos in a first sequence. White lighting in afterlife scenes contrast with warm lighting that embodies the colour of life on Earth. Laura McEwen, the designer, in an interview for the show's programme says, "Light and sound help to create the different worlds of the play. I hope the design celebrates the beauty of life on Earth against the big question of what lies beyond." The story takes us seamlessly through many scenes. The aluminium structure, later to become part of the stairway, initially serves as the metalwork of the undercarriage of Peter Carter's aircraft, as it's suspended high above the centre of the stage. Fog, smoke, and a projection of fire are part of the scene. We meet characters in the afterlife, in the receiving hall, with their clipboards and papers, a clinical world of rules and bureaucracy, and in the Hall of Records. In an escalator scene between the two worlds, light strips illuminate one by one on the revolving stage. On Earth, a beach scene is defined by projections of lapping waves on the sand, blue skies and sunshine. The rose garden at Leeward House is shown simply by subtle, deep pink rose projections on the floor. The village doctor rides a period motorbike and sidecar round the theatre promenade, as if riding around the village. Later, headlights beaming, she heads off on it, battling a storm. June rides a bicycle with two grey saddlebags a couple of times on stage. A recreation scene takes place in the former dining room of Leeward House, a grand manor house, now an Air Force base. As the floor slowly revolves, it's furnished with a variety of pieces of old furniture, placed one by one round the edge of it. The random collection includes wooden chairs with coloured upholstered seats, two comfy armchairs, one with orange cushions, a wind-up gramophone on a small table, and, between two chairs, a small table with a chess set. China teacups and saucers and magazines are used. For the garden of the Doc's house, the revolving floor is used again in the same way to set the scene with teal, ornate metal garden furniture. Two table tennis bats sit alongside a wooden tray on the small circular table. A jug of lemonade and two glasses are on the tray. A dappled light projection covers the floor. Peter, taken to hospital, lies on an old hospital bed that becomes an operating table too. In a final court scene, the judge stands on the front of the platform, scrolls and parchment the only props used. As the designer mentioned, sound is important in the production. Obviously, aircraft sounds and a world at war will be heard. A warning that there are a few loud noises, but there will be lots of lively music too. A big part of the colour and mood of the Earth scenes is the richness brought by the swing band. As service personnel playing shiny instruments, they punctuate the play with a total of 12 1940s hits. I'll hand over now to Brenda, will tell you about the band, the characters, and the clothes they wear.
As the house lights dim, musicians take their places on the platform above the main entrance, and singers and more musicians bounce onto the stage. A live jazz swing band and the Andrews Sisters style singers take us on an emotional journey when love, fate, and the laws of the universe collide. We have Alexander Bean on drums, Morgan Burgess on guitar, Howard Gray on keys, he's the performance musical director, Jack Hayden on trumpet, Jessica Jollies on saxophone, Sophia Manya on saxophone and clarinet, Jenny Murphy on saxophone, Luke Thornton on double bass, and Lucy Wells on saxophone. Four saxophones, wow! Well, they certainly wow us with Shoo Shoo Baby and Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy before the play starts. Amazing 1940s hits played on shiny instruments. All are dressed in 1940s US Army Air Force uniforms, from their easily folded garrison caps down to their russet brown lace-up shoes. Shirts, ties, trousers or skirts are in drab shades of olive green. The shirts have two patch pockets with a wings insignia above the left pocket. The trousers are held with braces and the A-line skirts secured with belts. The women may have swapped their lace-up shoes for T-strap dance shoes and added a pop of bright red lipstick. As the applause fades, the universe is projected. Actor and bass player Luke Thornton is now the voice. He sits centre stage gazing upwards, his uniform softened with a loose, comfortable cardigan. His square-framed spectacles convey a boffin look. As he gets up to leave, he swaps the cardigan for a uniform jacket and dons his cap. And then we encounter American Allied radio operator June and British Air Force pilot Peter Carter. June is 24, of average height and build, with black curly hair. She's in uniform, including the russet brown lace-ups. Serious-faced, she clutches her radio microphone and listens through earphones. Later, when cycling home, she wears a jacket. June is played by Kayla Copeland. Squadron leader Peter D. Carter is 27, of average height and athletic build, with thick, dark, brown hair, long on top and curly in places, but short at the back and sides. He wears a life preserver over a dark sheepskin flying jacket, bomber jacket, pale blue shirt and white silk neck scarf, light trousers with patch pockets and mid-calf boots, a close-fitting leather flying helmet, goggles and gauntlets. Later, he's in uniform. He wears a blue-grey belted four-pocket tunic jacket over a pale blue shirt and red cravat, trousers, peaked cap and black shiny shoes. Peter is played by Thomas Dennis. In the receiving hall, we meet the section officer with clipboard. She's in her mid-twenties, petite in stature. Her brown shoulder-length hair is styled in a victory roll. She's in uniform, but not in olive green, as mentioned before. It's a clinically white uniform, or should I say, heavenly white uniform. The section officer is played by Jenny Murphy, and two clerks dressed all in white accompany her. Queuing up to be checked in are the recently dead Allied airmen. All wear their uniforms, life preservers, sheepskin jackets, flying helmets and goggles, trousers and boots, but all bleached a ghostly white. And in the queue is Flying Officer Bob Trubshaw, a casualty from Peter Carter's aircraft. He's in his mid-twenties, he's 6'1", slim with wide shoulders. He has short, black, tightly curled hair. Bob Trubshaw is played by Elliot Parchment Morrison. Briefly, our airman Peter meets a dog walker. It's the trumpet player Jack Hayden, now wearing a taupe raincoat over a tan jumper, scarf and flat cap. A dog lead drapes his shoulders. In the Hall of Records, the chief recorder questions Conductor 71. The chief recorder is in her 30s, 5'5" of medium build, with long blonde hair clipped up in a victory roll. She wears a long white Grecian robe. The chief recorder is played by Jessica Jollies. Conductor 71 is ageless or ancient. It's difficult to tell, as he arrived in the Hall of Records during the French Revolution. He's 5'6" of slim build, his own hair swathed in a dandy pale grey curly powdered wig, tied loosely with a pale ribbon. A tall brimmed white hat balances precariously on top. A flounce of ostrich feathers decorates the hat. He wears a white satin frock coat trimmed with gold braid and buttons over a white waistcoat, a white shirt and silk cravat, white mid-calf knee breeches, stockings, gloves and white makeup, with cupid lips and a beauty spot. He conducts his nimble movements with a white walking stick. But on Earth, Conductor 71 wears a vibrant purple frock coat trimmed with magenta collar, revers, pockets and cuffs, a purple hat and dark grey wig tied with a purple ribbon. Burgundy gloves and shoes and brown walking stick complete his earthly outfit, his cupid bow lip now bright red. Conductor 71 is played by Michael Hugo. Motorbiking through the village is Doc Reeves. Capable and bold, Doc Reeves is in her 40s, 5'6" tall and shapely. Her long brown hair is curled and swept up and pinned into place. We glimpse her red earrings, the colour of her lipstick. A motorcycle goggles protect her big, open, kind eyes. She wears a brown woolen reefer coat with a fur shoulder cape. The coat flares from the waist and falls to mid-calf level. It's worn over a soft beige waistcoat, a pale shirt and a red silk cravat. She wears a pair of bold orange and brown check trousers, front-zipped brown boots and beige leather gauntlets. Later, she teams the trousers with a matching orange and brown check belted jacket. Doc Reeves is played by Polly Lister. At Leawood House, we meet the enthusiastic and bubbly entertainments officer, Shirley. She's in her late 20s, of medium height and build, with shoulder-length copper hair swept up at the front, and she's in uniform. Shirley is played by Lucy Wells. Dr. Lisa is a surgeon. She's in her late 30s, of medium height and slim build. Her dark brown hair is pinned up and hidden under a white, close-fitting cap. She wears a long white operating gown tied at the back. She's assisted by a nurse in a white uniform. Dr. Lisa is played by Sophia Manya. The judge, ageless and ancient, is huge. He stands aloft. He commands the platform. His long, curly grey wig caresses his shoulders. He wears a full-length, lustrous robe, silvery white, capacious, with long caped sleeves. The judge is played by Alexander Bean. Abraham Farlan is the fictional first casualty of the American Revolution. Aged about 30, he stands 5'8" with a slim build. His natural hair is hidden beneath a periwig. He's dressed in white. He wears a double-breasted tailcoat with a large collar, wide lapels, a high front waistcoat, and long narrow tails at the back. Slim mid-calf knee breeches, stockings and buckled shoes. Abraham Farlan is played by Morgan Burgess. Please listen on for the credits. Teresa Heskins, director. Laura McEwen, designer. Alexandra Stafford, lighting designer. Teo Akinbode, musical director and composer. Alex Day, sound designer. Beverly Norris Edmonds, movement director. We hope you enjoy the performance.